Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Before Snapchat.
What is that?
Before Twitter.
So what's the sitch?
There was. That's so throwback.
That was really good times.
That's so throwback.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Throwback Thursday memories.
A little silhouette of a man. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Put your hands up.
The throwback.
All you need is love.
The throwback. Taking it back.
Go back.
The throwback.
The throwback. Throwback.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Let's go back.
It is time for Throwback Thursday. Eric, you were supposed to remind me it's Throwback Thursday. I told you to remind me. I forgot. It's Thursday. It's Throwback Thursday. Right here on ESPN 1000.
Let's go back.
And we always got a good one for you for Throwback Thursday. Always got a good one. We go to Facebook, facebook.com, the social media app for memories. And I mean old memories. And cat pictures. And we have it here for you, as we always do. We go to you on Facebook, facebook.com. And we ask the question to you for a Throwback Thursday.
The throwback.
Who are the best dunkers not named Michael Jordan or Dominique Wilkins? You see what I did there, Eric? I took Michael Jordan out of it. You see what I did there? Because if I would have said, who's the best dunker you've ever seen? You know what would happen, right?
300 GIFs of MJ. That's all you'd see on that Facebook thread.
And, of course, around these parts and a lot of places across the country, Michael Jordan's the greatest dunker that anyone's ever seen. And Dominique is right there, who was robbed at Chicago Stadium, by the way, from he should have won one of those championships. That just never was going to happen in the Shy. But Dominique Wilkins was great in my era, and so was Michael Jordan. But we ask you at 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776, who is the best dunker not named Michael Jordan or Dominique Wilkins? Jump in on our Throwback Thursday right here on ESPN 1000.
The throwback.
And I look to the Facebook, and oh my, you talk about a thread. So I'll turn to you, Eric. Who is the best dunker not named Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins?
For me personally, that I've ever seen, it's got to be Vinsanity. Oh. Has to be Vince Carter.
Oh.
Swings it right side. Carter at the foul line. All the
with a right-handed monster jam. He just posterized Tim Duncan with a little salsa on it. My goodness.
Hey, Chuck Swirsky calling the Toronto Raptors games during that time. Vince Carter's everywhere on this. I mean, and can you name the dunk that was his favorite? Was it in-game? Was it in the slam dunk competition? There's a lot of names on this list. My brother Sean Knight says, for sure, for him, that 1990 dunk contest, Kenny Skywalker.
Kenny Walker, the defending champion. Kenny had a 47 on his first dunk. Doug told you about his injury problems this year, particularly his lower back. The windmill reverse on the baseline by Kenny Skywalker.
Out, just amazing. Now, see, people hear that soundbite from Bob Neal, right, from TNT back in the day. The slam dunk competition was cool back then, but it didn't have, like, the fireworks it has now, where you got seven people in the booth yelling and screaming over a dunk, whatever. Back then, just the professional voice of Bob Neal and Doug Collins, or Bob Neal and, like, it's like a guy that never dunked, usually. That was usually the broadcast team. It was fine. I mean, you love the dunks, but it was not like you got Shaq and, you know, Kevin Harlan and Kenny the Jet Smith and just like a million guys on the broadcast and Charles Barkley, you know. But back then, it was just the smooth-sounding Bob Neal on the call.
Let's go back.
And like Rick Barry doing color. Like Rick Barry was not a dunker. He's a free throw guy and a shooter. Was like, Rick, what do you think of that? Ah, pretty good dunk. Yep. It's like I did in my day. You didn't do that, Rick. No, you did not. Tyler Akey, who's the best dunker not named Michael Jordan or Dominique Wilkins?
Well, for me, it's Vince Carter, no doubt. But to go a little off the board here, I'm going to throw a name at you. Josh Smith, when he was with the Atlanta Hawks.
Oh.
Joe going for another game winner. He puts it up. It is no good. Jeff followed Josh Smith. Tapped the basket. And the Hawks have done it again.
So you got to love Josh Smith because of his size and he'd be able to get up like that.
Well, the other thing about Josh Smith was he always had the slam poster appeal from the magazine.
Yeah.
Like the Sports Illustrated for kids posters. Like Josh Smith, that's the one you wanted.
Josh Smith. That's a good name. I'm looking on this list. Do I see Josh Smith? I don't think I see Josh.
I think I saw a pop up at one point.
That's pretty good. I like that. On a Throwback Thursday. That's All-Star Weekend. We should be talking about the slam dunk competition. By the way, just between you and me and you, slam dunk competition should not be last on All-Star Saturday. When I go there and when Eric goes there on Saturday at the United Center, that should not be the last thing we see. It should be the three-point competition. That's the main event. And actually, I'm a skills competition guy, too. I don't mind that from the guards or whoever's going to be doing that. But the slam dunk competition should be like in the middle or at the beginning. I mean, it just doesn't resonate like it used to. It used to be the event. But no one's talking about dunks now. Here's where the dunk conversation came in. LeBron's latest, greatest dunk as Kobe passed away. That was a poster. Like, it was amazing that dunk he had. And it was a Kobe dunk, by the way. Trying to give props to Kobe. And that's the last time that someone talked for several days about an actual dunk in a game.
Did you happen to see what Bronny Jr. did then 2 days later? He did the same dunk in a game as well. LeBron's son did the same dunk that LeBron and Kobe did. It was actually really cool.
I cannot wait to see Bronny cross over LeBron in a game. And then he was like, now you're officially retired,
sir.
There
you go, Pop. Sit down. That's
why,
awesome.
That's why he's still playing. He's waiting for Bronny to get in the league. So Bronny will cross him over and LeBron just falls over like a cheap suit.
Imagine your son handing you father time. Can you imagine that?
I think that's what we're waiting for. Otherwise, why is he still playing, right? He's just going to be that old veteran that can still give you 20 at the end, but still, like, it's going to be one-on-one, way at the top of the key, and Bronny's going to be like, and then Bron's going to fall over like...
Like the AI on MJ?
Yeah, that's exactly what it'll look like.
Oh. Man.
That's exactly what it'll look like.
You kids don't know. That happened to Jordan a lot. Especially with smaller guards. Because Jordan would tell, like, Paxson or BJ Armstrong, move out the way, I got this. And like all of 6'5 Jordan trying to take on, you know, small point guards. Tim Legler crossed over Michael. I saw that as a kid.
Michael always went for the steal, so that'll happen. Now you'll get crossed when you're reaching.
When I do a show with Tim Legler on SiriusXM, I always remind him, like, still got that crossover in you. Like, think about Tim Legler, right? Tim Legler through the legs right, through the legs left, through the legs right, and Michael's moving like. Like, you know, he's got the lateral quickness of a rose bush. He just, like, moves over to the left, and, like, Legler just blows right past him. I'm like, oh, my God. It's like, but he would always take the challenge, though, Michael.
Yeah.
Move out the way, Pax. I got this. No, you don't. No, you don't. On a Throwback Thursday.
Throwback.
Of course, in those same games, Jordan would, like, put on, like, you know, put a 50 spot on their head. But you know who's getting a lot of love on here that I'm seeing? On the Facebook wall, Facebook.com, Nathan Bush says the best dunker that he's seen that's not named Michael or Dominique. It is Zach LaVine.
Zach LaVine? Whoa! Just climbed the ladder on Alex Land, and then Rubio taking the basketball away. That was the best Zach LaVine dunk I've ever seen in a game.
How young is these people on Facebook? Zach LaVine. Seriously? Zach LaVine is a terrific dunker. There's no doubt. You're just not going to see it in a Bulls uniform. Just won't happen. It won't happen on a regular basis. He's trying to score now. He's trying to give you 40. Thomas Bidding says Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon are the best contest dunkers since Neek and MJ.
Since that Vince Carter dunk competition where he like put his elbow in the rim and all that, that's been the only dunk competition that was exciting. Those two pulled out dunks that we have not seen, which is super rare.
Tab Branford says Ronnie Fields, which is, well, he was tremendous, high school. My cousin Maceo says Zach LaVine. What in the hell? Is he drunk again?
They're going to have to some speaks.
God, what is he talking about? I can't believe this.
He's a good dunker. He's exciting.
Cannot believe somebody in my family. Abraham in Lombard on ESPN 1000. What's up, Abe?
Hey, Hoodie, good to hear you, man. And you are my favorite radio personality ever. Like, not going to lie. You incorporate so much So I just wanted to give you your flowers while we're still here. You know what I mean?
That's right. Thank you very much for that.
All right. Hey, so Vince Carter, favorite dunk contest ever. But my personal favorite dunker of all time is Sean Kemp. He had the most vicious in-game dunk that I had witnessed. At least, you know, I'm a 90s guy. So, like, I loved watching Sean Kemp just terrorize everybody. So, for me, favorite, Sean Kemp. But the most awesome, like, you know, in-game or the dunk contest was by far Vince Carter.
The Sonics go chance to take the lead again. Here's left side. Works up hard into the baseline. Slapped away from the hot rim. He goes back to get it. Fires across court. Kemp's got it right up into the alley.
So, a couple of things about that 17-second soundbite. First of all, that's that dunk that Abraham's talking about on Alton Lister, which was just amazing. Sean Kemp was tremendous. Power dunker.
Yeah, violent.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Secondly, ladies and gentlemen, that's the good sound of the old NBA when you had the in-house organ playing in the background.
I didn't even catch that.
No DJ. No, you had someone that's watching the game over their shoulder, and they're seeing the play develop. Uh-oh. Dun, dun, dun,
what's
dun,
my dunk
dun,
organ
dun,
sound?
Dun, 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 dun. Oh, my God! It's like, you got to love the in. You don't get that anymore. The guard still has theirs, right?
I believe they do, actually, now you say that.
Okay, mm-hmm. So at least you, like, but and the United Center has it. They just don't play it for the Bulls. They play it for the Hawks,
you
right?
You do hear it during the Hawks games.
But the in-game.
The Sonics go chance to take the lead again. Here's left side. Works up hard into the baseline. Slapped away from the hot rim. He goes back to get it. Fires across court. Kemp's got it right up into the alley. Powers! Tomahawk!
You gotta love Seattle with the old in-game organ.
That's great. And two women got pregnant on that dunk from Sean Kemp.
That's so tremendous. I love that. That's the old school NBA right there, man. That's Stern a mustache back then. He got the old organ going. On a throwback Thursday.
The throwback.
Right here on ESPN 1000. Mike in Geneva on ESPN 1000. Hello, Mike.
Thanks, Jonathan. Love the show.
Thank you.
I'm another Vince Carter 2000 guy. That's the pinnacle of dunking for me. But my two personal favorites, one from the And One Tour, 50. I think it's Kenyon Martin's cousin. Mm-hmm. He's amazing. And the other is Shannon Brown, local guy. Got to see him in high school against my West Aurora Blackhawks and Damian Mason, another great dunker. Mm-hmm. But he got robbed in the McDonald's All-American dunk competition against LeBron. Shannon Brown did a great dunk from like a foot inside the free throw line. He took a huge running start, did a 360 from inside the free throw line. I thought he got robbed. He's my personal favorite. Great in-game dunker too.
Johnny Mitchell says folks sleep on Shannon Brown on my Facebook wall. So that Shannon Brown from Maywood.
He had springs.
Oh, mm-hmm. Just tremendous. Okay. So how do we feel about this guy?
It's a physical game.
Oh, my. A monster jam by Blake Griffin. Oh, what a play by Blake.
Ralph Lawler on the call on Fox Sports West. So how do we feel about Blake Griffin?
Isn't that why he was drafted number one overall? Because he was a dunker like that?
Yeah.
That's all he did in Oklahoma.
One of my favorite Blake Griffin dunks is a college dunk he did when he's going baseline. I think it was the NCAA tournament. He's going baseline, and he hits his head on the side of the backboard and still finishes the dunk.
Yes. There's a disconnect for me between college Blake and NBA Blake.
Early NBA Lob Blake. Lob City Blake with Chris Paul.
Pretty strong.
Had a lot of really good in-game dunks, and now he just can't dunk.
It wasn't necessarily tricks. It was thunder.
Yeah.
Yes.
It wasn't lightning. It was thunder.
I agree with that. There's a couple of people. Brian Dale says, for sure, Dr. J.
Pass deflected. Going to be stolen, I think, by the doctor. Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk. The doctor made a sensational play. The slam, he just puffed in his hand, swung that baby way around.
Wait a minute. Where'd you get that from? A porno?
Swung that baby way around.
Listen to that music. Where did you get
that
from?
It's the ABA, man, right?
I don't know. I don't know what you're doing there, but there's something going on.
Do you think Dr. J was the first one to make dunking as cool as it is, or as cool as it was?
Him and David Thompson. Well, first of all, it was the ABA guys.
Right. Which, do you think the NBA is more like, NBA now is more like the ABA than what the NBA was back then? Just the attitude, the game, the flair?
I think so. All you're missing is the smoke-filled armories and the coke.
Yeah, yep. Lots of that.
Piles of that. A lot of drugs back then. You think it was drug testing back then? They were just trying to get fans.
Yep.
But no, I think it is because of the amount of threes that we're seeing, more of these shots. Like, I know the old-school basketball fan doesn't like Houston, right? Don't like the idea there's threes and layups. There's no in-between. People are not going to respect James Harden. It's going to take Tyler's generation to try to explain to Gen X and baby boomers, like, look at these numbers. It's impressive. Look at the numbers. You may not like the step back. You may not like what he's brought, but the numbers are what they are. I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to discount the numbers because you don't like the style of basketball? It's what they are. What are you going to do?
It's hard to watch. That's the problem. I get it, and I respect the hell out of James Harden. I just don't really enjoy watching him play.
I don't mind the Rockets, because if the entire league was like that, that would be a major problem.
Sure.
It's not the entire league. It's just a specialized team that has James Harden and another shooter that only shoots 23% from three.
That's it.
Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, that's it. And he shoots it a lot.
By the time you're 40 and you're doing this for a living, sitting in this chair, doing this for a living, and trying to explain to the next generation, like, trying to explain the conundrum that is Russell Westbrook, that's going to be a hell of a show for you. You got to explain this, right? You got to sit here like me and explain, when Westbrook goes to the Hall of Fame, how maddening his game was as someone that could average a triple-double but shoot 23% from three. How are you going to explain that?
He's a mind-blowing player. Like, it's hard to explain him pure now. We're watching him live now, and it's hard to explain what he is.
I mean, they think so highly of him, they're going to take away all the bigs, and so they can let that guy operate. Like, just shoot the mid-range, man. Don't worry about it. Like, you know, it's like, just do that. I can't wait for Tyler's show, Eric. Tyler's show is going to be great, because he's going to explain, like, Harden. Like, when they're retired and go to the Hall of Fame, right? Harden, Westbrook, and what was that with Ben Simmons? He can explain
what
that.
Is Ben Simmons?
They're gonna a grizzled old Tyler Akey is going to be there. It's going to be like, you know, the thing I never understood about Simmons is that he never tried to shoot a three, but yet he's in the Hall of Fame. Does he belong in the Hall of Fame if he couldn't shoot threes? We'll get your reaction coming up. And by that time, there won't be like a phone bank. It'll just
be... you just tune in with your chip into my head.
You can TikTok in.
TikTok in.
Whatever the equivalent of TikTok is at that time, that's what it's going to be. There won't be no phone lines. It's just people just jumping in on the conversation. Just people just, beep, I was listening in my car and I was driving in the sky or whatever. And I'm just, you know, whatever the hell. Joe from Mars on ESPN 1000. Hi, Joe.
That's awesome.
You got to explain it, man. Like, what are we watching here? You know, the NBA, tell you what, the NBA is really interesting, because we're seeing some things that we thought we'd never see before, like a guy averaging a triple-double. And they're trying to crap on that, too, like that's not special. Like, it's hard to do. You may not like the basketball. You may not like the style, but the numbers are what they are. What are you going to do? Discount them? Just think I just did a different segment there.
Throwing it back to, like, that's, again, 20 years from now, we're doing the throwback segment that he's going to be doing, Tyler's going to be doing in 20 years. That's all that was.
When I'm listening in the home.
Yeah.
I'll just have this on replay. I'm just going to save this. You know what? I mean, the thing is, I probably won't be able to even play it. Like, how do you trans... It'll be like converting the VCR to the DVD and all that. Like, what am I going to do with the hard drive?
That's a good question. What do you do with the audio? Eric?
It's all in the cloud.
I'm just going to say that. Yep, it's in the cloud. I don't know.
That's just the answer for everything. It'll be in somebody's cloud.
Yep.
You may be able to pull this old film. It'll be like me when I interviewed Kobe, when Kobe told me that he was interested in playing in Chicago for the Bulls because he had a disconnect with the Buss family and was going to leave the Lakers. That, you know what that is? That's on a CD at my house. how do I get that off of there?
Right, you better not scratch that CD. Be careful now. Right. Be careful.
I got it on the CD, so I got to bring it in for you guys to help me. Something.
Burn this. What do you do?
How do you do? I need this sound.
Jonathan, why are you giving me... Did you make me a playlist, Jonathan?
I know, exactly. Clyde Drexler was a hell of a dunker as well.
And picked up by Drexler. Here he comes.
Well, I tell you, we have gotten a lot of these sound bites off of old NBA VHS tapes. I can tell that right now. The music underneath that you didn't need from back in the day. But you'd buy those things at the end of the year if you're an NBA fan. Like, oh, look at this highlight tape. So I'm going through the list here. That's a lot of what we talked about. Vince Carter looks like he's winning this. Spud Webb also getting some love. And actually, you know what? Of course, the best little guy to ever dunk to me, Spud Webb.
Woo! And Spud Webb comes through in the clutch to put the pressure on Dominique. This is so great. I mean, here's a couple of teammates. They live together for 7-8 months a year, and now they're going at each other. Great feeling.
Yep, Spud Webb was great. On a Throwback Thursday right here on ESPN 1000. All right. So coming up in our next segment, if you've ever wanted to know what Jim Boylan was really like, we're going to give you insight that no other show will give you when it comes to who Jim Boylan was really like. Let's give you a little taste of Jim Boylan before he came to the Bulls, before he had long tenures in the NBA. Jim Boylan would talk to the press like this.
Coach, you started that second half missing your first 12 shots. Explain how you were feeling during that run.
Like, shit. That's how I was feeling. How am I supposed to answer that? How would you be feeling?
Huh? What was the reason for the offensive inefficiency, Jim?
Ball didn't go in the hoop.
Why not?
Ball didn't go in the hoop.
Were you happy with the schemes?
Next question.
Coach, you hold.
Don't come here once every 2 years and ask those questions. I don't want to hear that from you.
I can ask the question.
Good. That's ask. I'm not answering it. Don't come here once every 2 years. I don't want to hear that from you. Yeah. They see to show up.
That's the Jim Boylan that I remember at Utah. The Jim Boylan you get now?
I think we're all kind of raw. I think Pop's hurting too. You know, he's had some unbelievable battles with Kobe. So I think the whole league's hurting. Both teams came out and played hard. And it was a good game, entertaining game, a lot of good plays. Pop's a Hall of Fame type coach who I have great respect.
More quiet now. Not the same guy he was at Utah. You know, when he...
Can you talk about the free throw discrepancy?
No, I'm not going to talk about it. Thanks for bringing it up, though. Appreciate that. You're my friend for life. We got 11 more shots than them. Turnovers were even. You guys know where the discrepancy was, so you figure it out.
The Jim Boylan that we remember from back in the day. What was he like? Find out next.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
How you doing?
Follow us on the gram at IGJHood and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Glad that you're with me here. All-Star Weekend right here in Chicago for the NBA. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Don't forget about the ESPN Chicago app for Android and for iPhones. It's right there for you. Just download the app. You get all the podcasts for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood and much more on the new ESPN Chicago app. The Bulls have been reeling in a big way in 1936. They have not been a good basketball team under Jim Boylan. But, you know, there was a different Jim Boylan before he came to the Chicago Bulls as an assistant and, of course, as a head coach. You know, when he was at Utah between 2007 and 2011, you saw and heard a lot of this.
Coach, you started that second half missing your first 12 shots. Explain how you were feeling during that run.
Like, shit. That's how I was feeling. How am I supposed to answer that? How would you be feeling?
What was the reason for the offensive inefficiency, Jim?
Ball didn't go in the hoop.
Well, why not?
Ball didn't go in the hoop.
Were you happy with the schemes?
Next question.
Coach, you hold.
Don't come here once every 2 years and ask those questions. I don't want to hear that from you.
I can ask the question.
Good. That's ask. I'm not answering it. Well, don't come here once every 2 years. Coach, I don't want to hear that from you.
Break.
Yeah. Sure, they see you to show up.
Of course, the Boylan that we hear today with the Bulls.
I'm not going to share the whole message with them before the game because I think, you know, some of those things are just for us. But I did talk about this, and I talked about it then this morning too, is we've lost one of the greatest competitors ever.
And so there's Jim Boylan that's a little bit softer around the edges than he was at Utah. But who is Jim Boylan? We turn to Gordon Monson from The Big Show on 1280 The Zone and part of the Salt Lake City Tribune. And he's with me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000. Gordon, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, man, thanks for having me, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
Does that sound bite to when he coached Utah, does that bring memories to you?
Yeah, it does. It brings back memories. Jim and I had a few run-ins through the years, and you know, that night, that was after a Utah-BYU game, and Utah really sucked that night. and that was a student reporter that asked that first question, and Jim jumped on him, and I just was trying to stick up for him a little bit. I wish I'd been a little more on my A game that night. I didn't feel like getting into a scrum with Jim. But he was pretty angry, and so we went back and forth. And that was sort of his MO as a coach at Utah. I don't know exactly how he's done his work in Chicago there, but let me say it this way: he was not a good head coach at Utah. When I found out he had been promoted to the head coaching position with the Bulls, I was pretty surprised. I know he had seen some success as an assistant coach for Popovich and in Houston and whatnot. But based on what I saw out of his performance with the Utah basketball team, I was pretty surprised that he was awarded a head coaching position in the best basketball league in the world.
Gordon, when did you know that when Jim Boylan first took over for Utah, when did you know that maybe the program wasn't going in the right direction? Because there was some success there in year two, getting the Utah Utes to the first round of the NCAA tournament. But there was a change right there after that season, was it not?
Yeah, Jonathan, you hit the nail on the head there. He did see early success, and then the thing just started to crumble out from under him. And, I mean, it was bad. Players were jumping ship. They were, I think, a third of the team transferred out over one period. And I think they just had their fill of Jim. This was one of the things about Boylan that was so interesting to me. I know his background. His dad was a football player at Michigan State. I think he was like a Golden Gloves boxer. And that's sort of the way Jim coached. He was kind of, if there was a problem, if there was something that needed attention, he would punch at it. Essentially, he would get physical, not literally, but he'd get physical with the problem and try and shake things up and make them better that way, as opposed to taking a nuanced approach and using a little coaching sophistication. I'll put it that way. He tried to throttle things back into place, and it didn't work at Utah.
Gordon Monson from the Salt Lake Tribune with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. And so I remember reading your column just recently going back to his last days with Utah in that 2010-2011 season when he went 13-18 and 6-10 in the Mountain West. And just the thing that resonated with me with that column is that Jim just seems though he always had a chip on his shoulder. And everything was with a little anger. I tell you this, he's not even like that in Chicago at all, where he looks like he's got to swallow it a lot because the Bulls are losing a lot. So I guess, would you say he's holding back? Because that persona is a little bit different than it was at Utah.
Yeah, it does sound different because back then he would bark at everything. He would try, and I liked Jim personally. I thought he was a nice guy, had a good heart and whatnot. But I remember him yelling at fans. I remember yelling at players. He got angry at opposing players when they were when they behaved a certain way. He was very fiery back in the day. He was trying to shake things up. I think he had good intentions, but he was just trying to make an impact in a way that did not work. And after we had our blow up there that you played in that press conference, later he called me and he apologized to me and he said, "Let me take you to breakfast. I want to talk to you and apologize." So I said, "Okay." So we went out to this cafe and I thought he was going to apologize, and he kind of apologized, but then he kind of made excuses over the next hour and a half, 2 hours, blaming his players, saying he needed some tough guys who could get after it and compete. And I was sort of surprised by what he was saying. And then ultimately it came time to pay, and he reached for his wallet and he said, I forgot my wallet. So I ended up paying for his apology breakfast for me. And that was pretty classic, I thought. So, I mean, I don't know whether he did that on purpose or whether that was just a wise old move on his part, but I got stuck with the bill.
Oh, God, that's classic right there. It really is. Well, Gordon, here's the thing. You mentioned some of the recruits that left. Was that after the team went to the NCAA in the first round, or was that in that last year? Because the way you wrote it, they were fleeing out of there because of Boylan's demeanor.
Yeah, that I'm not exactly sure. It's been quite a while, but it seems to me like it started as a leak, and then the water came rushing in, and guys were just jumping ship left and right. Many of the players weren't happy, and that reminded me of when Jim was first elevated to head coach there with the Bulls. Didn't he try to shake things up, and he was working guys in the practices and whatnot, and they kind of revolted, and he was forming like player committees and stuff like that. I mean, yeah. that was the Jim Boylan I remembered. Is kind of he coached at Utah, and I don't know if he did this at the Bulls initially, and maybe he was asked to do it by management. He was coaching the team at a higher level, like a JV high school team. I mean, that's what it felt like, and the players revolted. They didn't like that. Many of them. Now, I'm not all of them weren't that way, but many of them did not find that coaching to their liking, and so they were bailing. And then when he started losing games, in tandem with that, it was over. And there was a period of time where the Jazz were going to hire a coach. And the Jazz general manager is Dennis Lindsay. He's got ties to Houston and San Antonio. And so there were some rumors that Boylan, with his success as an assistant coach, that he might be considered for the Jazz opening at that time. And thank God the Jazz hired Quinn Snyder instead of Jim Boylan. I think that was a smart move on their part. I don't even know if they were seriously considering Jim, but I think the Utah fans that are part of the Jazz fandom would have revolted had Jim been named head coach. And again, I don't mean to rip the guy. I mean, like I said, I think he's well-intentioned, but he didn't have the acumen, Jonathan. He really lacked some of the acumen I think was necessary to be a head coach in the NBA.
Now, there's no question, Gordon. You nailed it on the head. It's just you're just speaking the facts. The facts are is that Fred Hoiberg gets fired, and Fred Hoiberg is a good man. He's with Nebraska now, and he's doing what he can with the Cornhuskers. But the feeling from John Paxson, the president of basketball operations, was that the team needed a little bit more of a kick-ass coach, because Fred was the ultimate player's coach. He played in the league. He didn't think that after Tom Thibodeau that the Bulls needed much priming. It was a team that was new defensive principles, and Fred wanted to treat them like men and didn't step in the way too much. And Pax thought they needed a little bit of a rougher edge, so they went 18 inches to Fred's right and hired Jim Boylan, and I said at the time, well, if the Bulls as a staff have an issue, why is Jim Boylan the head coach? Because wouldn't Jim be part of the problem? So Jim comes in, he becomes the head coach. The Bulls get blown out by about 100. The next day, Jim wants practice. for 3 hours, and the players revolted. Like, we're not going to practice after getting beat out. I mean, he wanted a long practice. Then he wanted to have them do wind sprints up and down as if it's a JV team, a college team. And there was a big disconnect between Zach LaVine, a lot of the players, and Jim. And so I don't know if it's much better now. All I know is this. Here's what Jim Boylan is good for. He tells you about the growth plate, which is something I've never heard of before. The growth plate of players, that's one. And two, with this six-game losing streak, he specializes in calling a timeout with 40 seconds left in a blowout. He does this every night, Gordon. Every night he's calling a timeout. And it's pissing everybody off because the Bulls have been beaten down here pretty good. And he just continues to draw plays, these imaginary plays with 40 seconds or 30 seconds left instead of letting the time go off. And so every team now is pissed off at him and the Bulls because of this.
Well, you know, that sounds just like Jim to me. I mean, you mentioned the kick-ass attitude. Look, once you kick asses and you kick asses again and you kick them again, then what do you do after that? What do you do when it doesn't work? What do you do when the players aren't progressing, when the team isn't progressing, when the team isn't winning? And all you can do is kick ass. And I don't think there's a second gear for Jim. I mean, he's not an idiot. I don't want to make it sound like that. He just is not a basketball wizard. And I've been covering the NBA for 40 years, Jonathan. And my experience is the teams that do well, the teams that win, are usually led by somebody who has answers to questions that are arising, has answers, solutions to issues that need addressing. And my memory of Jim Boylan was that when there was a problem, his idea was to hit it and to hit it again or kick it or punch it. And after that, I didn't see a whole lot of brilliance. I'll put it that way.
Well, I think that's all fair. And I'll leave you with this, Gordon.
You talk about the free throw discrepancy.
No, I'm not going to talk about it. Thanks for bringing it up, though. Appreciate that. You're my friend for life. We got 11 more shots than them. Turnovers are even. You guys know where the discrepancy was, so you figure it out.
That's vintage Boylan. You don't get that now. Now it's a quieter, softer Boylan that says kind of the same boilerplate stuff after every loss. But this is that's vintage Boylan right there, is it not?
Well, when he says you figure it out, no, you figure it out, Jim. You're the guy who's supposed to figure this stuff out. And look, I mean, the Bulls might not be the most talented team in the league. I get that, but what's a coach's job? A coach's job is to get the absolute most out of each player that he's got stewardship over. And if you can't do that, then if you're not getting the most out of your team, then what are you doing? I'm really surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised at the Bulls' lack of success. And like you said, they're on a six-game skid right now. I'm not sure that Jim is the man that has the answers. Now, guys like Popovich or buddies with him might have a problem with that assessment, but I'm just speaking from what I've seen with my own two eyes.
Gordon, as always, we appreciate it. And you gave us some insight of exactly what's on the bench for the Chicago Bulls. Thanks for coming on the show.
If I ever go to dinner with you, I hope you bring your wallet.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
It's Under the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
All right, tomorrow you'll hear the Charles Barkley replay with Waddle and Sylvie, which was a terrific interview. That's going to lead you right into the All-Star Friday. Next time I'm on the air is on Saturday from 3 to 7 p.m. I'll be with Jeff Dickerson. We're going to lead you right into All-Star Saturday night. So 3 to 7, right before, if you're going to travel and go on into the United Center, or if you're going to settle in to watch the skills competition All-Star Saturday, JD and I will be on before all of that, between 3 and 7 on Saturday right here on ESPN 1000. All of our guests are on the Corona hotline, like Ryan Hollins and Brian Mears and Gordon Monson, who was terrific, by the way. That's what you want to write there, Gordon Monson, because, again, I wasn't in Utah, but he covered the Utes and continues to cover the Utah Utes for the Salt Lake City Tribune and told you the real Jim Boylan. The Boylan that you're getting now is really trying to bite his tongue and not trying to go off I think eventually it's going to happen, because if you're that guy, you're just going to be that guy. And I know it's a different temperament in the NBA than college, but still, it continues to bubble to the surface. As I've said before, if you've lost Casey Johnson, ... that says all you need to know. Finally, let me talk about something I have not talked about on the air, but I've talked to friends and colleagues about, and that is Gail King from CBS News. Gail King interviewed Lisa Leslie, the Hall of Famer, WNBA All-Star, and they talked about Kobe Bryant. The reason why that Kobe came up in the conversation is because, well, Kobe Bryant is someone that means a lot to a lot of people. And in the 20-25 minute interview that I saw, Gail King asked a question to Lisa Leslie about Kobe Bryant and the charge that was against Kobe for alleged rape or sexual assault against a woman in Utah. And there was a question, then a follow-up question, and they moved on to something else. Now, Gail King had the right to ask that question because she's a journalist. And in order for you to tell the story, the real story of someone, you have to go through the background. I understand that we are praising, and I know I was praising Kobe Bryant. I was on with JD maybe an hour, hour and a half after the helicopter went down. It's devastating to everybody in sports and around sports and out of sports because of the story of Kobe Bryant and his daughter and others perishing in that helicopter crash. But even me on Monday was going through the timeline of Kobe Bryant's career. Within his career is that sexual assault. It's nothing that I dwelled on that Monday. You can go back to the archives of the Under the Hood podcast and actually hear what I said about it. But it's nothing to dwell on, but it is part of Kobe's career. It's not part of his legacy. It's part of what happened while he was in the NBA. The feeling that people only, and again, this is where we are now in society, people should have more time for perspective. They don't have time for perspective. They just go through their phone, see a soundbite, and attack in this cancel culture that we're in right now. And then 50 Cent, Gail King's ex-boyfriend, and Snoop, and so many others going after Gail for that question. Did they watch the entire interview? Probably not. But they saw that soundbite on Instagram. They saw it on Twitter and said, you can't talk about Kobe that way. Not now. You can't write about it. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Because it's part of the legacy. It's part of his story. But here's the thing that you could take solace in. What happened with Kobe and what happened in Utah, whatever happened there, it's not all that he is. The legacy now, after all of that, is for him to straighten out his life. And he did. And you saw him as a family man. Basketball aside, we know he was great. But we saw him as a family man, someone that was curious, someone that was smart, someone that was trying to help his daughter, help his family come out from something that he did, a negative that he put on his resume. Doesn't mean that's who he is. Just because there's a negative on that resume doesn't mean that that's exactly who he is. He was able to be able to rehab himself, his image, and his family at the same time. So the feeling that Gail King was in the wrong, she wasn't in the wrong. You have to mention it because that's part of what Kobe went through in the NBA. But he came out from underneath it as a great person, an ambassador for the game, an ambassador for fatherhood. And that's why hashtag girl dad continues to permeate throughout social media. Kobe Bryant was great, but just like all of us, he wasn't perfect. And that's okay. We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000. Again, I'll be with Jeff Dickerson coming up on Saturday, leading you into All-Star Saturday night. Enjoy the All-Star festivities. If we don't connect on Saturday, let's do this Monday, 8:30 to 10, right here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Hi, everybody.
On ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Oh, jeez.